for the most part on Bogodan here. In the case of board tender, though, it's a bit different. I mean, just remember that not all tenders come to the board. And like I explained it earlier, anything up to 750 million has got can be signed off at executive level. Anything up to investment and over budget level goes to the board. Other than that, from 750 up to investment level is at BTC, Board Tender Committee. So the board doesn't see it.
So the Kuba steam generator issue would have come to the board?
I'm not sure. Was this in my time? I don't think that was in my time. You're talking about Areva and Westinghouse,
huh? Yes.
Yeah, no, I think that was before this board. We actually just picked it up when the court case and what actually happened in the court case. But the actual decision wasn't made by this board.
Yes, again, all sorts of information gets thrown around. So am I right about what I heard, that neither you nor any member of your family is associated in any way with any Gupta-related firm?
That is correct, sir.
So it's not true that Mr. Harold Klein is a co-director of the company Shiva Uranium?
First time I've heard it, and it definitely isn't true.
No, I'm just asking you.
Definitely isn't true.
Okay. So in your stay from May 2014 to your departure in 2017, there have been a number of interesting developments. One of them is the IT tender and the controversy around T-Systems. You're aware of that?
I'm aware of it, and like we said earlier, board takes full accountability, but that didn't come to full board.
But as a member of the governance committee, you become aware that there are governance issues, whether it's New Age, whether it's the steam generator, whether it is the T-Systems issue, what do?
You go and you speak to the people concerned and try and get to the bottom of what's going on.
So, did you get to the bottom of it?
Not that one, I didn't.
Why?
Just, have you got the date on that one? I think that was January.
2015.
January 2015. I was not chairperson of people and governance.
No, you don't have to be the chairperson to take responsibility. Yeah. You're a board member.
Honourable Gordon, if I had gone every time I had heard that there was a problem in ESCOM, I would probably have slipped.
Did you raise the issue at a board level to say, there seem to be some governance issues here, can you have clarity?
On the TNA one.
I don't think you should make your responses so frivolous.
Yeah, on the TNA one.
Do you accept my point? Nobody's asking you to lose sleep. I'm asking you whether, as a member of a board and as a leading member of the Institute of Directors of South Africa, you see governance issues broadly as your responsibility. That's all.
I agree.
Don't talk about sleep.
I agree.
And so where did you fail?
To use your words, by not taking it into the board and saying, I want a full deliberation on this matter, which seems to be coming up.
And so that adds to the corruption stories that we hear now, totally unfolding in its totality, because there was no check and balance from the board at that point in time, which includes yourself.
I wouldn't say there's no checks and balances. The fact that I maybe didn't take it in, like you've correctly pointed out at the time, doesn't suggest that there were no checks and balances.
No. On this particular matter?
On that particular matter.
No, there's any series of matters that we can put to you. All right, so let's go to another issue that my colleagues have raised, the suspension of the four officials. You said you were the only person that objected to the suspension.
No, that's not what I said. We were talking about some other suspensions at that stage.
Okay, let's talk about Mr. Matona and company. What reasons were given for their suspension?
At the time, the view was that they would slow down the inquiry, which was agreed would only be for 3 months, and that there were no charges brought against any one of them, but that we'd asked him to step aside in the interest of getting this inquiry done.
And you agreed with that narrative?
Not initially, but I was persuaded to afterwards.
What persuaded you?
The fact that we needed to get our hands around the business. We needed to get the going concern issue sorted out. We were sitting.
So how was Mr. Matona and company standing in your way? I mean, you actually suspend a CFO who would have helped you to resolve going concern issues, but you suspend her.
And that is what we shared earlier, Honorable Godan, that that was one of the biggest oppositions that this board had. The board wanted to do a detailed piece of work. The board wanted to go and see exactly what it was, why we needed to suspend, particularly the CFO, to your point. But we were persuaded otherwise.
So the miracle would have been performed by the Dentons investigation. The miracle would have been performed by the Dentons investigation. That would have uncovered whether your concerns were valid or not.
No. Whether we could get to the baselining of what was wrong in ESCOM at the time.
But how were you going to do that?
By having a look at the contract management, by having a look at the different processes were being followed, by making sure that where there were allegations, those were being checked.
So that investigation took place?
That did take place.
What report is that contained in?
In the Denton's report.
But you just said it wasn't the Denton's report.
No, it was.
I put it to you. Let me repeat my question. I know it's been a long day for you. So let me repeat my point. Four people get suspended. In fact, the next question I should have asked you is, what information was given to you that those four, any one of those four people, would stand in the way of uncovering, inverted commas, the truth?
None.
But you still believe the narrative that they would stand in the way?
Part of the motivation, Honorable Godan, which was discussed this morning, was in the case of Tulufelo, that she had met with somebody to do with some tender. That was the motivation that was given to us by the then chair. In the case of Mr. Koko, that there was some alleged thing with another staff member. Those, because obviously we were pushing. We wanted to do a bit of a deep dive, and we were being persuaded that the investigation would be slowed down if the four people were to remain.
And Mr. Sediso, Matona?
There wasn't any reason given, there wasn't any reason just to say...
So as a person who has contributed quite formidably, it seems, in terms of the paperwork, to making sure that there's good governance in the private sector in South Africa, you stood by and allowed an innocent person to be suspended and virtually smeared.
The answer has to be yes, sir.
Okay. On the Denton's report, so there's many versions of the Denton's report, it appears. Am I right? And what did the board do to make sure that a genuine Denton's report actually was presented where it was required? Why were the changes allowed, and by whom were those changes directed to be made?
The basis of the inquiry was for 3 months. I'm finding it a little bit difficult to follow because I've got my honorable colleagues here helping me.
Members, please.
I'm struggling.
My apologies, ma'am.
The Denton's report or the Denton's program was going to be for 3 months. The inquiry was going to be for 3 months. Was one of the resolutions as agreed with Zola Tsotse. When the report was brought to the Audit and Risk Committee after about 2 months, all the allegations had been listed, but we were told they were not all corroborated. The view of the board at the time was you could not put
up... So what percentage were corroborated?
Probably about 50%.
Okay, so what did we do about the 50%?
That 50% was then put into the formal report, which became the Denton's report as we know it today. All of those findings were broken up into the different subcommittees to take control of the issues that needed to be corrected in the organization. And at last count, everything except for one had been resolved. All of the matters covered in the Denton's report. That was the feedback.
But according to public knowledge, the Denton's report, apart from the technical things that needed to be dealt with, right, seems to suggest that there was rampant corruption in ESCOM, which included board members and top management. Is that true?
I cannot comment because I do not know about that.
Is it true? Was it in the report or not in the report?
I don't know that it's in the report, sir.
I beg
that
pardon?
Certainly was not. If you say board members, I looked at that first report, I saw no board members' names in there. Unless they were previous board members that I didn't identify with, I don't know.
Did the minister have any role in directing changes be made to the Denton's report?
Not as far as I know.
Modifications of any kind?
Not as far as I know. She only got the report once it was corroborated. It was shared with her. That's my understanding.
How do you know?
That was my understanding.
No, but how do you know? You say to such authority, she only got it at this point. How do you know
I'm
a copy wasn't given to her beforehand by somebody that you don't know about?
I don't know that, sir.
You don't know, okay. Now, the Tagetha deal and the guarantee given by Anuj Singh of 1.6 billion rands via APSA, that's a violation of the PFMA.
Agree? I totally agree with you.
What did the board do about that?
At the time when it was brought to the board for signature, we were of what came to us by way of round robin was 1.6 billion rand for coal supply, which was in urgent need by the organization. That came to us on the 8th of December 2015. It was based on that I said I would not sign up to this unless we have an IFP where we at least get a bit of technical background as to why this was required. An IFP was then conducted first thing on the morning of the 9th, and after input from Dr. Pat, who then chaired that for us, in terms of the technical, why it was necessary, why we needed the coal, I was uncomfortable to sign that off. The going and
what's a guarantee with got to do with supply of coal? Sorry.
Please round off.
No, I've got 20 more questions, Chair. No, because I think these are important for clarity purposes, so that both the public that's watching and ourselves understand exactly what Ms. Klein has to offer. But I'll take your guidance, Chair. This is a guarantee, a bank guarantee. What's it got to do with supply of coal? This is a guarantee that enabled Tagetha to buy optimum. It's got nothing to do with the supply of coal.
Honorable Godan. What we got as a round-robin resolution was for the purchase of coal. There was nothing about a guarantee in there.
Okay. Subsequently, long before your departure from Eskom, you would have heard that there was this guarantee given.
No.
You only heard it after you left Eskom.
Honorable Godan, that came out at a media conference where, about 2 months or 3 months ago, where one of the media people asked Anuj Singh about the guarantee. That was the first time I'd heard about it. I'd not known there was a guarantee issued prior to that.
So is it possible that the senior officials at Eskom kept that away from some members of the board?
I don't think it's possible. I think it's definite that that's what happened.
Okay, Chair. Maybe one or two last points. One is, now you left in 2017, right?
Yes.
So in October 2016, nuclear procurement is shifted to Eskom. Was that done with the board's prior approval?
No. I remember the meeting very clearly, Honorable Godan. There was apparently a meeting between, I think it was Mr. Koko at the time, and the Minister of Energy. And it was brought to the board's attention after the meeting had taken place. And I remember the board feeling very strongly about the fact that this is passing the buck because Eskom was never going to be running with that nuclear procurement. And the board, it was a long session where the board said, why are we taking this on? And, you know, meeting with the Minister of Energy, surely our Minister, Minister Brown, should have been involved or at least given some direction on it.
So also during your term of office, there was this prepayment of 600 odd million rands. To Tagetha. Again, the board wasn't aware of that.
No, I certainly was not.
That wasn't the question. The board wasn't.
The board may have been aware of it because there was a board tender committee, BTC, who dealt with it, but the actual transaction was never escalated to the board.
Last question. Mr. Pomensky, or Pomensky, to be more accurate, joined the board at about the same time as yourself.
That's correct.
All right. Now, again, as a governance member and chair at various stages and being part of the Institute of Directors of South Africa, the issue of the conflict of interest in Mr. Pomensky's role on the Eskom board and in Oak Bay Resources. Did that ever arise?
No, it didn't. In fact, so that we're clear, Honorable Gordhan, we don't sit and go through, I personally, as governance, didn't go through every person's conflict of interest. That was dealt with by company secretariat. It was only where there were problems that they would come and discuss it with me. But that never arose in my time. It certainly didn't come to me.
Was there a conflict of interest?
Mr. Pomienski believes there was, and I don't know.
No, what do you think? You're the governance guru.
Without looking at the actual structures, it's very difficult to say.
No, he's on the board of a company that's doing business with ASCA.
It's enough room to go and ask the questions and go look at it more deeply, I would assume.
Well, it appears that you didn't quite get to the point where you did ask the question. So the last point, Chair, is in the context of all the information that's available at the moment, where it is now well known to most who want to listen and believe that Eskom is one of the captured entities as part of state capture, how do you feel about your role and the period that you served on the board?
I say it in my statement, I thought it was one of my finest moments until I realized all the things and all the noise in the papers. I've said it before you arrived, Honorable Gordhan. I just pray that inquiry into state capture will happen and happen quickly so that those responsible for wrongdoing will be held fully accountable in front of the law.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. And let me also appreciate your coming to the meeting or to the inquiry and come and clear some issues that we do not understand. My main concern or my main problem as I'm listening to you is that the view that you are giving us is that the legal team within ESCOM, the legal team within ESCOM is not helping the board or the executive members that are working within ESCOM, because most of the issues that you have you have spoken about are of legal opinion coming from your legal people from ESCOM, and some of them are very much challengeable by law, if I can say so, even by the constitution of the country. Do you agree with me on that?
Referring specifically to the issue of state capture and the report and the review, I totally agree with you, because the legal opinion that we got said one thing where the board said another. I also did indicate, Honorable Ranto, that I think over time the legal department has become smaller and smaller. So I think that's why if you listen to ESCOM today, most of the opinions are from outside. They get outside opinions. So I think there is probably a need to strengthen the legal department. But yes, a lot of the opinions we're getting are from outside, and some of them have been proven to be wrong.
I was once confronted by a number of people, communities in here in South Africa on the issue of load shedding. I was of the same view that you have, that the arrival of Mr. Brian Molefe in your institution made a big difference, and it actually helped us. I was of the same opinion like you did. I was convinced to accept that his appointment in ESCOM has been a very good act to get Mr. Molefe in the issue of and help us in the load shedding. But there is an opinion outside there that says the load shedding actually was just was done purposely so that Mr. Molefe will be taken in as to become a CEO to remove somebody so that Mr. Molefe can come in and become a CEO of Eskom, so that all the deals that are being kept for them to run through, especially because there are deals that the board cannot get through because of the apparently the executives that are within Eskom. So Mr. Molefe was raked in because of that. Is that a correct opinion, or is just what people are assuming outside there?
That's a very difficult one for me to answer, because I must say what I saw when we arrived from a load shedding perspective was caused by many years from 2008 until 2014 when I joined of not paying attention to maintenance. I mean, we've got this international best practice or standard which talks of 80-10-10. 80% of the time your electricity flow is 100% perfect. 10% of your time you take down your machinery for maintenance, and the other 10% things will break. But by the time we started, we were at 69% of time that we were up, which is why we were in load shedding. And the story this board was given was that it was from 2008 that there was a decision to keep the lights on at all costs. What it meant was it didn't matter if a thing was going to be breaking in a year's time according to the guarantee. You couldn't take it out of commission. You needed to keep it on. So if you say that it was orchestrated, I think it's got to be properly investigated. And if that is found to be true, then I'll buy it. But that's certainly not what I saw.
When you reappointed Mr. Molefe, with all the contracts that you have, the five-year contract, all the English that you have in appointing Mr. Brian Molefe, and he stepped down and he was reappointed again. When you reappointed him, even if it was for few minutes or for few hours, did you reappoint him with a new contract which was clear to you that you would understand, and that he would also understand that in the near future the contract is standing is as like this? Because you had I am really surprised that a big company like Eskom wouldn't know that if we are taking a person from a certain organization to our organization to come and help us in this organization, we need to set up standards. I mean, that can happen in a preschool also. If a preschool does not have a teacher, the teacher that will be coming to help this preschool, that will have a certain standard that teacher will have to follow. In your case as Eskom, seemingly there was no standard, there was no contract that was in place. You were just enticed, if that is a correct word, enticed by the impression that Mr. Molefe has put in front of you, and then you just raked him in and put him in the institution without even looking at the legal impact of it. That is why I'm asking your legal people within Eskom, are they really doing the correct job? Is that do you have the same view as I am having?
Honourable Ranto, let me say this to you. I think Eskom, being as old as it is, has never had this level of I don't even know what to call it, maladministration around the appointment of an individual. I think it has got something to do with the fact that this is the first time that a CEO in this organization is put onto a five-year contract. And I think with that, I would like to believe that the people who have been doing the actual contracting for many years and have gotten it right for many years actually did not know how to convert from what they had as permanent all the years to a fixed-term contract and do it in a way that makes sense. But I believe you're going to be bringing more people who actually does the administration, and I'm sure you'll be able to get that from them.
Thank you. Is it possible that you can explain the character of Mr. Anton Minnaar? When I say the character of Mr. Anton Minnaar, I don't mean his usual character, but the character within the company. What type of a person, what was he of help in the in building or developing Eskom, or was he actually in Eskom to take down Eskom?
As chairperson of people and governance, I think I was the one who probably worked the closest with Anton Minnaar in the time I was there. I don't know about previous boards. Anton Minnaar comes across as somebody who has been, who has been in Eskom for the last 16 years, I think, and in the last 16 years has been responsible for bringing in, and not bringing in, but doing the paperwork around the appointments, pensions, increases of all senior executives in Eskom. He comes across as a person who's been at Eskom for many years and somebody that I don't believe would play with his pension, somebody who takes his job quite seriously. So I would be surprised if there was a view that he would be taking down Eskom. If anything, I think he always tries to do the right thing, but there may be, you may be asking the question from a particular purpose. I'm not sure.
Because is he, I take it he is the one who facilitated all the reappointment or the administration work that should be done in Eskom in appointing a CEO reappointing a CEO and administering the issues maybe that concerns with that concerns the pension funds of executive. That is why I'm asking what his role within the company, because I take it a person who is being appointed and has got a legal background should be, who is appointed in that position that he has appointed, should be looking at ethical conduct of members, ethical issues of the company, so as to get to the decision that he has taken in facilitating all the issues that were happening around, especially around the reappointment of Brian Molefe. Can you explain further?
I think it's important to note that Anton Minnaar is not a lawyer. Anton Minnaar is an administrator, you know, so he would be the go-between between the pension fund, he would be the go-between between the Department of Public Enterprises, but administratively, he would basically execute on what the board has decided. You know, so he's really just the administrator. The legal opinions or the legal input and the contracting would have been received from our legal department.
The minister asked for a letter in the when he got that letter that he was looking for during the, it was during the reappointment, ne? Or yes, the minister then, what was the attitude of the minister when she got that letter? Did she agree on the issues that were written in the letter, or did she have some other questions or raise issues that were in that concerned her in that letter that was given to her?
Honourable Ranta, I'm not sure which letter we refer. Do you know which one?
The issue of the pension fund and the reappointment of it's during that time. It's a letter that was written during that time. It's just that I can't find the page now. I did not mark it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Look, I was when the pension fund issue first hit the papers, I was with to go and sit with the minister, but I'm not sure if there were any other letters that went after that. I'm not aware of that, Honourable Ranta.
Maybe I will get it some
okay.
other time, and maybe I will
yes,
leave
no problem.
The question to somebody else. Okay. I'm also concerned about the 6 o'clock meeting of the board. I did not hear you. Maybe I was a little bit late. I came a little bit late in the meeting. I was not sure what really transpired in that meeting. That when Mr. Koko, when all of you took a decision that Mr. Koko must be released or must be suspended, then you come to a 6 o'clock meeting. There's a different view on the issue. Or you did, when you went to that meeting, were you going there to that meeting to go and suspend him or for him to give reasons? Because you are speaking about about reasons that you want from him in saying, give us reasons, why can't we suspend you? Were you not having a decision, a clear decision to suspend him and just give him reasons of suspending? Because you had reasons for suspending him. You still believe that he was supposed to be suspended.
I believe that he should have been suspended, which is what I've been saying. At the meeting, the earlier meeting, which we were listening to the recordings on, it became very clear that the most people wanted him suspended, but I think it was Mr. Corsa who put on the table the issue of process, the policy issue. When you suspend someone, which was exactly the same that happened to the other four people that were suspended previously, you call people in and you say to them, you give us the reasons why you believe you ought not to be suspended. And that is what happened there as well. The thing is, though, that he then was going to be responding to Dr. Ngobane in writing on why he ought not to be suspended. Where I was at a bit of a disadvantage is I didn't realize that we were going to be playing that tape, because then I would have had that exact minute. I would have known the date. I know for a fact that we met again on the 28th of March where that same thing was discussed. And he even acknowledged, the fact that I had warned him previously about his behavior towards staff. I just need to go back and find the exact date when the first meeting, the one that we listened to the recording on today, happened.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, ma'am. It has been a long day, and we appreciate your cooperation for this interaction of the committee with you, and the information and the clarity that you have given to the oversight inquiry assists us in a great deal to have a more understanding on what transpired within the board and the company itself during your tenure. And for that, we really appreciate your staying for this long. And we wish you a safe journey back to your destination. And once more, thank you. Honourable members, let me take this opportunity to convey our sincere apologies to you, especially ma'am, because you arrived very early today, that we are delaying, there are delays, and we still have to break for up to maybe 1,600 hours, but I did send a message to you, and you are still okay, and we appreciate that very much. And also, I'm aware that we are behind time for another witness that is going to come after you. We apologize. We are apologizing in advance. Members, we are breaking, and I would like us to quickly grab some eats so that we go back to the house, and then we'll reconvene at 1600 hours. Thank you very much.